What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of Polititeen. If you are new here, Polititeen is a podcast that hopes to spark political conversation in our youth by talking about current politics with people that are currently politically active. With that being said, thank you for tuning in to today's episode, and as always, happy listening. Go. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Polititeen. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Varun.
Hey, guys. My name is Varun. I am the co-host of the Polititeen podcast here with Damien. Here at Polititeen, we talk about the nation's biggest issues from a youth point of view, our standpoint. We talk about raising political conversations about these issues and really, really making America a place of acceptance for all. Now, today's episode is very, very special. We're coming off of a great episode with Charlie D., who was a member of the queer community who we interviewed this Monday to talk about the issues with that community and how we can get past them and create a path to acceptance for all, even without understanding. So make sure to look at our past episode after you listen to this episode if you're new to our podcast. And if you're new, also make sure to follow us on Twitter at Polititeen Show or to connect with us via email at polititeenpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, definitely. So I just shared my face with you, Varun, because we've been talking about trying to be more not as podcasty on the episode, and I'm really excited about this new format that we're taking. I hope the viewers do enjoy it. We've really gotten to kind of grow with our community, and we really appreciate you guys. You know, the support that you guys are showing. We appreciate our guests a ton because it's nice to see that they're also supporting the podcast beyond coming on it, which is already, I mean, incredible.
Yeah, let me go put my light on for my room so y'all can see my face. In the podcast. Give me a second here. You can begin talking about topics, Damien.
Yeah, no, for sure. As I was telling Varun, I mean, we're just really trying to kind of have a better feel for the podcast and try to keep you guys a little bit feel like you guys are really part of the experience and that you guys are really getting to know us as opposed to, you know, just having me and Varun be your podcast host. We kind of want to create a better community. We've made some exciting strides to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're on the verge of starting our own Patreon for any donors who are going to become donors for the next couple of weeks and the next couple of months. So we're definitely going to launch that by the end of the week. And hopefully we can have some people donating money to our campaign to finance our advertising and better audio for you guys with the podcast. But without further ado, let's begin. I just wanted to ask Damien, before we begin our podcast today, you know, how's life? How is everything with you?
No, it's been really good, man. And you know, on that point, I was going to have my first question be an interesting one. So I've been getting more into different podcasts, and I've really been into cars. I own a 93 Jeep Wrangler. So I've been getting into cars and trying to customize that Wrangler and stuff. And I've always followed this really good podcast called Past Gas. Or Past Gas, and it's from Polititeen Media. That's us. It's from Donut Media. Yeah, we can get a car podcast going. Yeah. That'd be awesome. Follow our Patreon to listen to our car podcast now. it's from Donut Media, and one of the intro questions was, "What do you think is the best way to protest?" So I wanted to ask you that. What do you think is the best way to protest?
That's a hard and interesting question, Damien. I'm glad that you ask it, though, because I've never thought about that myself. I think that the best way to protest is probably by making some calls.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is because, you know, going outside, especially during COVID, during this time, it's hard to go outside and to gain viewers and mass people in a protest because of the whole situation around the virus. But I feel like making calls is a more personal way to contact people, because I've made calls for campaigns such as Solomon Rajput, Krista Olenzak, and other campaigns like that. And making calls provides a personal connection between you and another person, especially when you're talking to like big organizations and big political figures. So it kind of forces people to contact and think about topics head on. And that is the way to really, I guess, protest against a certain issue. And the other medium, and I feel like you'll agree with me on this a little bit here, is social media for me. Because, you know, we've seen so much awareness being spread on social media. Personally, I've become a lot more aware about issues that we face today on social media and by looking at social media trends. So that's the two issues that I would think are the most important for protesting, social media and calls.
I would actually disagree with you on social media. I'm going to have to agree more with Ted Terry, someone that we're going to talk about a little bit on about the podcast or a little bit on the podcast about in a little bit. But I think that social media has taken too important of a stride. I feel like the real way to create change and to really protest is to go out. Obviously, that's really hard during COVID. So in respect to like what's going on right now, I think social media is extremely crucial. But to create real change and to create real conversation, I think you have to go out and have real conversations about real change as opposed to kind of like arguing on Twitter. But speaking about arguments and stuff going on Twitter, you want to inform the guests what was going on with the stuff that we were talking about before the show?
Yeah, so we had an account on Twitter, which was, I guess, against Ted Terry, tweet at us and say, hey, young leaders at Polititeen, Ted Terry on your podcast said, lead, I think he said lead by action, not just don't take my word for anything and lead by action. And we had them say that, maybe to interview some Clarkston residents because he hasn't led by action in the past. And it was striking and surprising to me because I've always viewed Ted as a person who I guess leads by action and has made strides towards a lot of good things in Clarkston County. But I think that my stance upon this, Damien, before we go into the basic optics of this, I didn't even look at it very, very deep, but I understood that if you're doing something good in the world, you're going to receive backlash. And that's something that we've stayed true to. I've stayed true to in my life. If you're doing something good, you're not going to always be accepted by everybody, and there's going to be some flaws that they point out. Like we said in a couple of episodes ago, if Jesus came down to earth, they would find a flaw with him. If Jesus was a Democrat, the Republicans find a flaw with him, and vice versa. I think that it is sometimes a little bit of a stretch. I don't know about this specific situation. Damien, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, no, I just think that it's an odd situation because, to be honest, I feel like no matter, what politician you are, what side of the aisle that you stand on, you're always going to have, I think what they were focusing on in the tweet was the fact that he didn't stay true to everything that he promised, but that's extremely difficult as a politician. I think that we should hold our politicians to the highest regard and always make sure that they try their best to do everything that they have promised us. But we also have to remember that there's opponents on the other side of the aisle trying to prevent them from doing this. And that's, I think, a big issue in kind of today's politics. I feel like both Democrats and Republicans are just trying to go against what the other side is doing, just to kind of troll them. Like, I feel like it's kind of like an age of trolling now. And it's really interesting because I think that Ted, from what I've seen and from what I've, talking to him, obviously, and just doing research on him, he's come through with a lot of the promises that he's made. So obviously, I wouldn't expect him to come through with everything. It's extremely difficult. But I think that he's a great candidate. I think that he's an even better person and an amazing American.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to look at a tweet and to look at what residents have said, and to kind of analyze it by that. But I would actually love to interview a resident of Clarkton, and maybe not the people who are in the tweets, but people who are just genuine residents and want to speak about Ted Terry as commissioner and even as mayor of Clarkston. I feel like them talking would bring another perspective into the conversation here, either for Ted Terry or against Ted Terry. But as I do with anything else, and I think everybody in America should do as young leaders and young advocates and even of all ages, I think that we should look at a politician not by what we see online, but by what we do in emailing them and calling them and in having conversations like this. I know it's always not always possible, but when you are able to join town halls, discussions online, or even interview them for a podcast or something of that nature, it brings a different perspective to it. I think by talking to Ted Terry, I'm not fazed by what people said online because, I trust Ted as an individual and as a person because I think that no matter what he's done, he really represents his constituents and wants to make moves forward. And speaking about making change and transparency in politics, I wanted to ask you about something that's kind of veering away from our perspective about racial tensions in America that we've been discussing for the last couple of episodes, and that is the coronavirus. We saw Trump come out this morning and in previous dates and White House administration officials going against Anthony Fauci, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the senior official who reports to Trump about the virus, and saying that he's solely focused upon the public health side of it and is not focused upon the entire United States, his response to the virus. Now, what do you have to say to these officials, Damien, who are confronting our nation's top health expert and saying that he knows nothing and even trying to derail his qualifications?
I saw a very interesting conclusion drawn to this, and it's kind of what they do in like communist states. They say that the scientists don't know anything and that the scientists are wrong. And I thought that was really interesting perspective, because always as Americans, and we talk about this, you know, kind of in the paradox, not a paradise episode, but always as Americans, we think the United States is the best. And you know, that this nation is, you can't even compare it to any other nation. We're just top tier. We're in our own bubble. We're just so incredible, and we could never be like the communists. But it's really a sharp conclusion to draw, but it's very like realistic. Like it fits the situation very, very, I mean, perfectly. It's difficult because I don't think that we should say that the facts are wrong in a time where facts are so important. And I think that we're getting to a point, and I always saw, you know, no offense to the Democratic Party, but the reason that I've always considered myself a centrist is because I've seen the Republican Party as more of a party of facts as opposed to feelings. And I'm a very strong believer in facts, but I don't know what the hell they're doing now. I mean, they're also going based off of Trump's feelings, which is a very difficult situation to be in, because I don't know, Trump's – I don't even know that man had feelings. But when you're talking about him, he gets very butthurt about it. And I think that we're starting to see that he kind of has this dictator mentality where it's either you're for him or you have to get the hell out.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. I am kind of a centrist, but a more centrist Democrat, because – I think of it the same exact way as you do. I think the Democrats actually have more facts, converse of what you say. They go off of facts instead of emotions. Because thinking about, you know, climate change, I think that was my main differentiating factor in the Democrats considering the facts and Republicans kind of going against the facts and going for public interests and even abortion. I think the Democrats always consider the facts of the situation in my personal opinion. But I wanted to mention to you, based upon the point that, you know, you'll find holes to kind of poke in the facts to kind of, you know, get your partisan interests out there. It is climate change. You can choose to believe in climate change. You can choose not to. There's plenty of opinions and valid reasoning against and for climate change. But the fact of the matter is that climate change is real. And no matter what kind of reasoning that you give against it, that's a fact that you cannot bypass, as is the fact that the coronavirus is real and the coronavirus is something we should pay full attention towards. But, you know, Anthony Fauci is an advisor to the president for the sole purpose of analyzing the facts, analyzing what the virus is and how to address the virus. And with the president saying that he's analyzing only the facts, it's only saying that he's doing his job, because it's the president's responsibility to also analyze the economy and things like that.
Yeah.
But when Dr. Fauci is saying that hundreds and thousands of American people will die from this virus, and they have died from this virus, it's important to consider. Because no matter how many bounds you can take to secure the economy and ensure that the economy succeeds, you also have to understand that we have to have masks on.
Yeah.
We have to have social distancing guidelines. And I haven't been seeing that. You know, I'm going off on a tangent here. I'm going to end on this point.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, I saw Vice President Mike Pence walk into a Trump office with a bunch of his staffers. And literally there was, I don't know, 50, 70 staffers within an inch of a radius of each other. And Vice President Pence was walking in with no mask on.
Yeah.
And he posted this on Twitter, and it received so much backlash. And it goes to show that the American people, and especially Mr. Trump and his overall office staff, is not taking the situation seriously.
Yeah, no, it's funny because I remember, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Donald Trump was making fun of Joe Biden for wearing a mask. And now you have this picture of Donald Trump walking down this hallway with like 15 people behind him, like generals and such. And he's wearing a mask. And I feel like Donald Trump he'd tweet this. I feel like he has the audacity at this point to tweet this picture and be like, real leaders wear masks. And just like make a complete contradiction of himself.
He's not going to face his voter base.
Yeah,
they're still going to trace true to him. You know, I don't think there's anything he can do to face his voter base at this point.
Yeah, and that's why I think that his voter base is also shrinking so much, because it's gotten to the point where like you have to be extremely dedicated to him, and to be extremely dedicated to a politician, that's very difficult.
Yeah, and you know, back in I think Obama's first run for president, we had an estate a felon almost beat Obama in the Democratic caucus. I believe that was a story I read a couple of months ago, but it was because he had such a dedicated voter base behind him, and those voters won't ever phase out no matter what Trump does. I think one of the times I was talking to my dad, he said that if Trump murdered one of his supporters' children, they wouldn't stop supporting him. And I, you know, it may be true because they're that committed to him. I mean, if they haven't, he's murdered. I believe that he's murdered millions of hundreds of thousands of Americans with the COVID pandemic already by not making masks clear and social distancing clear. And I'm a strong believer in that. I think that, you know, by the president wearing a mask at the military hospital to visit patients, it shows that, and the fact of the matter is, Damien, all the news channels, they looked on the story and they publicized the fact that the president is wearing a mask. And it goes to show that if that's such a big deal, what kind of America are we living in?
Yeah.
You know, we're wearing a mask with a global pandemic. For the president of the United States is such a big deal. It goes to show that, you know, there's a big issue and there's a big gap in how we're dealing with the crisis. I guess my next point with the virus is that, you know, with Fauci's recommendations and opening schools and everything like that, we received a lot of information from Betsy DeVos, or the lack of information from Betsy DeVos, Secretary of Education. So how do you feel about her coming out and speaking what she said?
Oh, man, I just watched her interview. I was walking up the stairs, right? So I have my office downstairs and I was walking up the stairs, and we always have CNN on. You know, now people are gonna call me liberal, but I mean, just I just can't deal with sometimes the things that, like, what's his name, Tucker, his name on Fox
Carlson, News. Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, Tucker Carlson. I'll just walk upstairs sometimes, and we'll have Fox News on, and he'll be saying some stupid stuff, and I just like turn off the TV. I'm like, I really can't, because like, people will argue that CNN is more, you know, has a more liberal view, but the thing is that they bring on different people that don't agree with them. And you'll like be walk up at like 9 p.m. and you'll see Chris Cuomo on, and he'll be like having a bunch of Republicans on, and he'll be arguing with them. Whereas with Fox News, this is a tangent, but with Fox News, I feel like they're always just bringing on fake doctors. Like, they'll bring on a Dr. Phil, and they'll be like, Dr. Phil, what is your recommendation for masks? It's like, Dr. Phil isn't a real doctor. Why are you asking him? But either way, that's
you know, there was one time.
Yeah, go ahead.
There was one time that Fox News, they flubbed a news story of like a girl. I don't know. I think she like. It was something about suicide or something, and they flubbed the whole story to cover up one of Trump's big issues in a matter of like 5 minutes, and they figured out the story was fake. So from that point onwards, I stopped watching Fox News, because it didn't become an issue of political sides and bringing in different political perspectives, but right there became an issue of facts versus fiction, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, no, definitely. But no, either way, I was walking upstairs, and I see Betsy DeVos on, and what was the question? Oh, crap. I'm going to turn off my fan because it makes too much noise. But what was the question? It was like, oh, do you believe that CDC?
What was the plan?
Yeah. I don't. What was it?
The one I watched was about plans, and that was highly publicized. But go ahead with what you're saying.
Yeah, no. I walk upstairs. I forget who was interviewing her. But the question was like, what do you think? Do you think CDC guidelines should be implemented, should be like rule? And I answered the question as she would answer it, and like word for word she said exactly what I said. She answered something along the lines of, oh, they're just recommendations and they need to be seen on a case-by-case basis. I just think that it's a really weird situation where, like, oh man, I don't know, I don't think she has an education, and I mean that with like utmost respect. I don't think that she really has a stance to be talking on any of this stuff. It's just weird. She just says some stupid stuff sometimes. She said that Miami-Dade, I think, county schools had a plan, but some other school systems didn't have a plan when their plan is clearly outlined. It's just she's going with whatever Trump says, really. I think that she's trying to keep her job, but she was saying some ridiculous stuff about just COVID-19. I don't get this whole thing where it's like, well, they're CDC guidelines and they're recommendations and that's just what they are. It's like, yeah, they're recommendations, which is why they should be like heavily followed. They're coming from your own government. It's just an odd situation.
I mean, Trump thinks the CDC, and he's put out a bunch of quotes, the CDC director, and saying that he has no idea what he's talking about. It is not specifically what she's saying, but the fact that our president doesn't recognize the number one center for disease outbreaks in the world and the nation itself, more specifically. But Betsy DeVos, I mean, I was watching interviews just like you. I mean, walking up the stairs on CNN, because we always have CNN on downstairs just for people to watch when they're coming down. in our house as well. But what she was saying was almost upon the same exact script every single time.
Yeah.
And it was almost like I could look at what she's saying and analyze it and anticipate it.
Yeah.
More specifically, she was literally going off on the same tangents, like you said, over and over and over again about how the plan should be on a case-by-case basis. And the CDC had no idea about the mandates, and there were only recommendations. Now, my stance upon what she said is that we should have a plan, not only for a case-by-case basis, but analyzing and managing cases in every single school if we do have outbreaks. Because not just generalized and specific outbreaks. Outbreaks at schools lead to outbreaks in counties and outbreaks in states and outbreaks in a nation.
Yeah.
So it's not just a locally contained issue. We have to make sure that we contain it, and we have to have generalized plans for that. I mean, I think that there's no one-size-fits-all. I agree with her on that standpoint. But reading articles from previous CDC directors, previous Department of Education chairs, Department of Health chairs, earlier today, I was looking at the fact that we have to have masks that are mandated.
Yeah.
You know, we have to have areas like cafeterias sealed off. And that's not a general standpoint. That has to be a general procedure for all schools to open. I do believe the school should open, Damien.
Yeah.
That we should have generalized procedures for schools to open.
Yeah, me too. I think that schools need to be open 1,000%. And I personally can't wait to get back to school. There's so much stuff that, you know, we have so many plans and we really want to help our school out. And those can't be implemented on the same level if we don't get to return back to school. So I'm praying for schools to open, and I'm 1,000% with her. And I think that everyone's 1,000% with her. But I think that a case-by-case basis, and again, this is my opinion, is the stupidest thing that I've ever heard. And let me explain why. Because if everyone has their own case-by-case basis, then all the cases are going to be different. And if everyone's taking a different stance and a different approach to it, then no one's ever going to be able to get to the same level. We need to all, as a nation, you know, take the same stance. It's the same thing, I believe, with you know, police brutality. All the police departments across the nation need to have the same level of vetting and the same level of training, federally mandated, in order for us to try to limit this. Because if we have one police department doing one thing and then another doing another, then you're always going to have issues and you're always going to have conflicts. Now, even with Corona, it's going to be more so, because this is something that's contagious. Whereas police brutality, I mean, some might argue that it's contagious, but this is something that's highly contagious. So if we're going to have the county next door not doing the same thing that we're doing because they don't have as many cases as us, then we're going to start to get as many cases, or they're going to start to get as many cases as us, because they're not taking it as seriously. So it's a difficult situation. I think that we should honestly just, as a nation, bunker down. I think that the issue was with us closing, that we closed, and I've said this multiple times, we closed long enough for it to get annoying. Like, I was annoyed. But we didn't close long enough for it to do anything. We closed for like 2 weeks, I think, here in Georgia. So we didn't do anything. I mean, we just literally annoyed people. And something that's very interesting, and something that I was thinking about earlier, was the fact that people were like, you know, crying the whole civil liberties thing for them wearing masks. But yet they allowed the government to, you know, keep us locked down and inside for 2 weeks. And, you know, there was some protests here or there. But it's just, if you're going to talk about civil liberties, why don't you just go outside and wear a mask? As opposed to what's going to eventually happen, the government's going to have to do the same thing that they did, and they're going to have to actually take away your civil liberties. So wear a mask, follow the recommendations, you know, that the CDC, you know, those idiots at the CDC are putting out. What do they know, right? Not like they went to college or anything, but not like they paid for their SAT scores, but it's just ridiculous. It's just frustrating. These, how can someone say that they don't know anything when these people have dedicated their whole lives to this?
Interesting, and it's frustrating, because I think that in the American system, a case-by-case basis is one of the most flawed procedures to happen. Because if you're looking at it in this way, we're going to have one case-by-case or one uniform thing for the nation, I think is a better approach. Because think of it like this. If we have one uniform approach to reopening schools and that approach is flawed, we can, you know, kind of shift that approach towards a better approach. And that makes it a whole lot easier for us to manage the virus, because it's kind of a usable and shiftable approach towards kind of revoking the coronavirus and making it contained within schools. But I believe that, I mean, situation is far too broad right now for us to really make masks not an option, or not a mandate.
Yeah,
you know, masks should definitely be a mandate, as you said, because that's the way to move forward in our nation. I mean, I was surprised looking at countries like even North Korea, countries like Japan, countries like Canada having less than like 50 cases per day, and them just being like a couple of 100 miles ahead of some of the United States. And it goes to show that any country can do it. I think that it's the American, I don't know. I don't know what it is, Damien. I think that it's something about the American people.
We're stubborn.
That makes it hard for us to follow. We're stubborn.
Yeah.
We're very stubborn, but the problem is we're stubborn the wrong ways. You know, if we're stubborn in keeping masks on like Japan is, we'd be in a far different position right now. We're stubborn in the wrongest ways. And that's what I feel like we should fix in our nation. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I think that we are slowly switching towards being more okay with masks and being more okay with masks and being more okay with masks. I want to see more companies take initiatives. I think that Uber did put out a really good commercial where it was no masks, no ride. And I think that that's incredible, you know, that they're saying that if you don't wear a mask, if you don't protect their drivers, then their drivers have no reason to be giving you a ride. And I think that athletes need to come out and say it, and everyone needs to come out and say it. But I was at AutoZone the other day, yesterday, getting some parts for my Jeep. And there was a couple outside that had masks going inside. And there was, we entered, or my dad entered, I stayed in the car because, you know, I don't think it's necessary for everyone to enter a store during this pandemic. But you know, he entered, he had his mask on, the employees had their masks on, and there was this one guy without a mask on, and he looked like so scared and like so out of place. It was very interesting because he kept looking around at everyone, and it's almost like if he wanted a mask to appear in his pocket so he could put it on. And he looked very like alone, if you get what I'm saying. And it was the first time that I had seen, you know, someone not have their chest out for not wearing a mask. I feel like a lot in America, you know, if you don't wear a mask, you're seen as this macho man, and like you're seen as like this, you know, very, very you're seen as quirky, I guess. It's like quirky. Oh, you don't have a mask on. You know, so interesting. Tell me about it. Why don't you have a mask on? Let's sit down and have coffee without masks on, and discuss why we don't wear masks. But like now it feels like they're becoming a more isolated, they're becoming an extinct population.
And that's a good thing, Damien, because the more that we do that, and we talked about it with Japan, kind of having masks as a requirement and ostracizing people who don't wear masks, that was a way forward for them. And now in America, I think we should adopt a similar approach and make that a way forward for the American people. You know, it's interesting you say that about AutoZone and how your experience went there, because I haven't seen much of that. You know, it's a rare occurrence, like you said, to see somebody without their chest out, not wearing a mask, because, you know, on a public stage, our president has made it kind of a norm not to wear a mask when it should be the norm for the exact opposite. Seeing figures like that, like I said a couple of episodes ago, emphasizing the fact that masks should not be worn is kind of a riveting thing for the American people, especially people trying to make a change by wearing masks. And speaking of corporations, I wanted to discuss how Apple... Specifically, I don't know if you saw this, but Apple had a certain software on their new update for the iPhone where you can turn it on, and it says that whenever you come into a radius of a person who has been flagged for the coronavirus, you kind of get an alert. And I want to explain this a little bit more. So, yeah.
They're
so, for example,
us.
If I... A little bit. It is. That's what people have been saying. They've been saying that Apple's been tracking us, and they've been looking at all of our phone logs. But it's the exact opposite. I feel like it's an optional approach to people who want to be extra safe with the pandemic at hand. Yeah. What I believe they do is they track like the proximity of where you've been and the location of where your iPhone has been, and seeing if you've come into contact with somebody with the virus who has been diagnosed with it. Because those hospitals send, I think, analytics to Apple to pinpoint who has the virus and who doesn't. But the thing to consider with this and remember is that it's 100% optional. Yeah. You know, nobody has to opt into this kind of service, and that makes it kind of, I think it's a good thing. If it wasn't optional, I'd be completely against it. I'd be like, you know, they're spying us. You know, they're literally using our data. But right now, it seems as if they're giving us an option to be extra safe, which I believe this new software does. And it exemplifies what you said about corporations taking extra responsibility and offering civilians a better approach and means to stop the virus.
Yeah, no, definitely. I want to, you know, we're talking about corporations now. I just want to say that we're not sponsored by AutoZone, but if they do want to sponsor us, you know, we're going to start up that the car podcast soon. So be sure to hit us up, AutoZone. But no, I think that Apple doing this, it's a unique approach to it. I think that it's, you know, I've always had the same idea that, you know, if you're willing to sacrifice 1 ounce of privacy for security, then you deserve neither privacy nor security. I believe that 1,000%, but really we should be using technology to our benefit. I don't think that this is an invasion of privacy. I definitely don't think that it would go against any HIPAA laws. I think that it would just be like, hey, you were exposed to coronavirus. You should probably go get checked out. You know, I think maybe the same thing should be done for STDs. I think that, you know, if we did that, people would be like, mm-hmm. oh, that's great. But like now that it's, I don't know, wait, it's just become so damn political, to be honest. It's like anything that's corona.
Why is the virus in human lives political?
Yeah.
That's my question. Why are American lives a political issue? I think that that should be more of a moral issue instead of a political one. But I think that in today's political state, I think everything is political. You know, we can't escape that reality.
Yeah, no, definitely. But no, I feel like it's a good thing. It's a good thing that it's optional for sure. I'll definitely just have it on. I don't see that there being any reason for us not having it on, to be honest. But I mean, it just makes for an interesting discussion. What do you think about giving up privacy for security? Is that an undemocratic ideal? Giving up.
I think that it's democratic as long as it's optional.
Yeah.
Because our democratic ideals. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say. I said giving up privacy for security, and I think I worded that right. I wasn't sure. go ahead.
Yeah, I think you worded it absolutely right. But yeah, I believe that, you know, it is democratic as long as you're giving an option for anybody to give up their privacy. I think that it becomes undemocratic when we're having governments and private corporations monitor people's data without asking for it. And that's exactly what Facebook did.
TikTok.
You know, Facebook got people's data without they really screwed up there.
Yeah.
You know, they got people's data without asking them for permission and gave them to corporations and political entities, which is against the fundamental democratic idea of keeping people's things private if they don't want it to be leaked out in the public. But it's completely democratic if a person consents to having their information put out there out of the public, and that should definitely be a conscious option for the individual to align with our nation's purposes and our nation's practices. But I wanted to kind of consider the economic approach that our nation should be taking towards the virus. You know, Biden dropped a plan earlier this morning, you know, dedicating $300 billion and $400 billion respectively towards manufacturing and infrastructural efforts, and more specifically, putting funds back into the American funds for PPE and personal protective equipment. And that was a big issue in the beginning of this virus, you know, because Trump didn't replenish the funds for PPE after the H1B1 epidemic. I think that Biden's making good strides and promising to replenish those PPE funds. How do you feel about his new economic plan? And people are saying it's the biggest economic plan since the World War II age with in terms of mobilization of American resources. How do you feel about what he's doing to stimulate the economy post-coronavirus?
I think that it's long overdue, and I think that Donald Trump is messing up a lot. He's not stimulating the economy. He's actively kind of being hoping the virus spread in many senses. He's being a proponent of the virus spreading. And then on top of that, you know, he's not trying to, you know, it goes back to the proponent of being a virus spreading, but he's not reestablishing this PPE, and he's not, you know, obligating big companies like GM or like Ford to create more ventilators or to create more PPE, which is something that he has in the Defense Production Act, if I'm not mistaken. And I feel like he hasn't used it. I feel like he really hasn't used the Defense Production Act. And it's something that's long overdue and something that should be being used, especially for PPE, especially dealing with the current pandemic, especially to create jobs right now. You know, again, you have the New Deal, and the New Deal created jobs out of like mandatory things that were needed. You know, whether it was Eisenhower used it to create, you know, construction on the free interstates, if I'm not mistaken, and he provided, you know, jobs to people in that sense. So why don't we have people being provided jobs in this sense, where they have to create PPE, where they have to create more canned food, where they have to create cheaper alternatives to different things now that we're facing this pandemic? I think that it's long overdue. What is your correct approach to kind of dealing with this? Do you think that kind of, I guess it goes back to the whole, you know, not being controlled by our government, but do you think that kind of obligating companies to do this? I mean, you have companies that are doing this out of their own will. I don't know if you saw this.
Yeah.
Again, we're talking a lot about cars. I think we need to start this car podcast, but I think it was Lamborghini that started their, they started producing handmade face masks. And no one obligated them to. And it's just something that companies are doing. So I don't see why we're not taking advantage of it.
I think that companies should definitely make more goods like that. And then the problem in America, Damien, is that there's not a lot of companies who make PPE. Most of our PPE is imported from China and these big facilities from other nations. And the fact of the matter is that with these other facilities, their first interest is going to be in gaining money. And that means that they're going to be facilitating PPE to Europe, to other places in Asia, other places in Africa. And it's not going to be a sole focus upon America. So the goal forward should be definitely establishing PPE facilities in the United States. And we're looking at the sole PPE facilities in the U.S., you know, profiting a lot from the virus. And more importantly, the reason why they started these facilities, I was looking at an interview on YouTube a few days earlier, was to help with the outbreak of COVID, and especially before they kind of anticipated this outbreak. Because I believe that Obama a couple of years ago stated that there was going to be a big outbreak like this one.
Yeah.
There was going to be a huge by air outbreak of a disease, and it was going to wreck the economy, and we should be prepared for it, which yeah. we weren't in this epidemic. We should definitely invest in more PPE producing facilities domestically, and also put more money into securing that in case we have another virus or epidemic later on, which it seems very probable. But I think now we have a better infrastructure to kind of manage that. And I did want to mention the topic of, you know, reinstating jobs in the U.S.
Yeah.
I wanted to first of all mention the stimulus packages. I think they're a good thing to ease the pain right now, but I think they should definitely be paired with a closing down of the economy, because that kind of gives us a standstill, a little period of I guess a Band-Aid to the crisis for a little period, but it doesn't stop the issue at hand. So I think that it's almost like it may be a bad analogy here, but it's almost like a company's going down. And instead of reorganizing their company and firing workers, they hire more workers and put more money into, I guess, free checks and throwing away money. You know, it's a Band-Aid to the issues at hand, but it doesn't solve the crises that we're facing as Americans. And so my approach that we should be taking, we should have taken a long time ago, is to shut down the economy and use stimulus checks to kind of manage it for a little bit. And once we're back on track with the virus, then go out and reinstate jobs in the American economy. And like Biden said, put billions of dollars into creating more, first of all, green energy jobs with clean cars, clean non-fossil fuel jobs, so that we can create, I think he said, over 5 million new jobs in clean energy. So it's an amazing kind of promise that we can have.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, speaking of creating jobs, I think we should look into creating some politine masks that you can get on Patreon for sure. That'd be interesting. Let us know if you're into that. Check it out at patreon.com/politine. Not to plug ourselves there, but you know, it's important. Yeah. It's crazy that there's such a future in different things, but we keep going back to the past, and I don't think that that's good for anyone. I think that, you know, Donald Trump keeps focusing on what the president that he used to be, or kind of like in the sense, if you get what I'm saying here, he keeps focusing on how great, you know, the nation used to be before. Not that it was great in respect to now it is, but you know, it wasn't anything incredible. I think that a lot of his attributes and a lot of his achievements and accolades were, you know, because of Obama. Let me let my dog in. She keeps scratching the door. Give me a second.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have to agree. I think that part of the accolades, a lot of them were actually created because of the Obama administration, because of how much work they put into, you know, organizing the economy. And if you look at the trends that the Trump administration had faced in the first years of his presidency, economic growth, it was, you know, predicted by Obama based upon what he did during his administration and moving forward with that overall plan. I think that the virus was something that it was a bad thing for the nation, and Trump wants to kind of ignore that as much as possible for political motives. And that goes to show that he literally is ignoring a crisis that has killed thousands and thousands of American people. That's not something that should be played around with. You know, death is something that shouldn't be played around with. We're seeing a lot of Republican people and conservative, I think, anchors and a lot of conservative celebrities. I was looking on Facebook at their Facebook accounts, and what's happening with their accounts is that mostly conservative people, obviously not all conservatives, but they were tweeting about how the virus is a hoax and how the virus is fake, which if you don't recall, Trump was tweeting about the same thing very early on. He was saying the virus is a hoax created by the Democrats to derail his campaign efforts. And they said that, and they didn't wear a mask. And, you know, now on their Facebook profile, it says that they passed away, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it goes on to, there's three posts I've seen. The first one was the virus is a hoax. The second one is I got the virus and I'm slowly recovering from it. And third one is the person has passed away.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting and sad, ironic mode of events for that individual and these individuals that I've seen. And it goes to show that this is people's lives you're playing with.
Yeah.
And it's not a political point.
I have an idea here. And I think that this can be somewhere where I can compromise with conservatives. If we all close our eyes, right, and we turn off all the TVs and we pretend like the virus isn't there, maybe it'll go away. I think that it's really an approach that we should take. I think that we should include this in CDC guidelines. If we don't talk about the virus, it can't be there. So we need to stop testing. We need to not wear masks. We need to just like hide, really. It's almost as if we were in quarantine, but we're really not. So it's kind of like, you know, you get the best of both worlds here. We pretend like it's not there, so we all just stay inside. And it can't, if we can't see it, it can't see us. It has to be a really good approach here. You know, I think that I should definitely be sitting in some government. I think that I might replace Dr. Fauci, to be honest, if Dr. Fauci does get fired. But it's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. And, you know, it kind of, again, I brought up the whole communist thing. And the doctor that warned the Chinese government about coronavirus died from it. So it kind of goes to say, like, you know, people are saying that it's – and it's interesting because we're kind of seeing a repeat of what happened in – when was it? Was it March, really, that we started kind of, like, closing down and everything and states started taking it more seriously? We're kind of seeing a repeat of that now.
So
at the beginning, it was like, oh, it's just the flu. Now Donald Trump – you know, and then we had, like, three months – or 4 months of where it was like, oh, it's not the flu. We need to take this seriously. And then it started dying down a little bit. And we're back at the point where it's like, it's 99% safe. Like the virus doesn't do anything. Literally words from the president. I don't remember the exact quote, but he said like 99, it does nothing to 99% of people.
He said that.
It's 99% safe, something like that. So we have kind of that whole mentality where the left or the right again is saying that it's a hoax, that it's fake. The president's saying that it's 99% safe, that it's nothing more scary than the flu again. And then on the behind the scenes kind of schools are closing down again. And we're getting in this perpetual thing where it keeps happening and it keeps happening. And it's happened twice at this point. And now there's conversation of schools doing exactly what they had done in March and just completely closing down. Whereas literally 3 weeks ago, we were having conversations about how schools are going to get back to normal and how everything's going to be okay again and how we really, you know, we really stopped the curve. And now we have Florida reporting 10,000 cases, not to mention all the other states. 15,000. And I think that now we have it's interesting because now we have more cases per day than we've ever had throughout the whole pandemic, if I'm not mistaken. But I feel like we're taking it less seriously now. Like we're less afraid of it, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, the conservative approach has been to always say that with time, something goes away. Trump at the beginning of the virus said that it would miraculously disappear.
In the summer,
he's continued to say that it would disappear. Yeah, and you know, it is interesting that he thinks it'll disappear because the virus, you know, it's not a fairy tale world we're living in. We have real issues that don't disappear with us just not talking about them. So we have to definitely talk about it and raise awareness because that's the only way we're going to make people wear masks and make people social distance. In society, more so, it's about raising awareness about the issues and the facts of the matter in today's society. But I think that it's important to also mention that, you know, Trump is retweeting stuff which is downplaying the virus and just constantly talking about things that go against what the premonition of today's top health experts is. But you know, I wanted to also mention. Last week we had on a Latino anchor or a Latino podcast guest, Latina.
Latinx, Brenda, I think Lopez, is the correct term now. I hadn't heard about it, so I think it's Latinx now.
What'd
because the X. I think Latinx is the Latinx. Correct term because the X kind of stands for either O or A. And in Spanish, you have Latino, and the masculine form represents everyone. So I think that they're trying to like fix Spanish. I don't know. Latinx representative.
Latinx. All right. We had our first Latinx guest on the podcast last week. And it's worth mentioning that the Democratic Party with Biden has been extremely, extremely focused upon the Latinx vote. You know, we saw the former Bernie Sanders campaign official with the marketing procedures come out and release a book. He's about to release a book about how they managed to capture the Latinx vote. for the DNC. And if you look at the statistics, Bernie captured a lot of Latinx voters by having things like soccer nights, you know, lottery nights, and having all of their advertisements in both Spanish and English. So it goes to show that in the past couple of years, past couple of elections, the Latinx vote has not been mobilized to the amount that the Bernie Sanders campaign mobilized and focused upon them. So, I mean, you're obviously a member of the Latinx community. You have a lot of people who you're friends with and family members as a part of that community. In your opinion, what is the approach to where we can reach that group, both beyond linguistic divides and beyond kind of cultural divides, and really, really mobilize that voter segment, especially for the Democratic Party?
Yeah, you know, the viewers can't see us, but I just made like the most like shocked face because that is probably the toughest question that I've ever faced. How can you get, you know, our vote? I feel like it's difficult for first generation immigrants to really get their vote. And I say that because I feel like in the Latinx community, what really matters, and I feel like this might be the correct approach to it, we don't care about politics. We care about our family first and foremost. And I feel like that's an approach with a lot of immigrant things. And we don't have time to worry about politics. And that goes to show and that's kind of it's subject to the fact that we don't have these opportunities where we can sit down and ponder. We have to keep working. We have to be, you know, picking food in the fields. We have to be painting houses. We have to be at the mom and pop shop selling tacos. We don't have time to turn on CNN. We don't have time to really, listen to the news. So I feel like if you really want to get the Latin vote, you have to, first of all, show how important the voting to those communities is. I feel like that's the first step. And, you know, I feel like a lot of it is targeted towards getting young white people to vote. When you talk about go vote, but I feel like you really have to target older Hispanic people, because young Hispanic people, from what I've seen, are extremely politically active. But it's the older, you know, older generation immigrants that have just come here that don't really care about it. They, you know, will stay residents and they won't become citizens because they don't see a benefit of becoming citizens. And something else, and something that's really interesting, is that some of them are afraid to become citizens, especially now during the Trump administration. And this is something that I think has not been spoken out a lot, because there's this fear that if you go and become it, there's been this fear created in the community that if you become a citizen, they can take away your residency. If you don't get accepted for becoming a citizen. So, for example, let's say you're a resident and you had committed a crime before you became a resident. So you go apply to be a citizen and you get denied because you had committed a crime. Then they would take away your residency because they weren't aware of that previous crime. Do you get what I'm saying here?
I do. So I think there's more pressing issues with that community. You're right. Absolutely. I'm gonna let you continue this. Sorry.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I feel like we have to get them to stop being scared. I know there's Latin community or Latinx communities that don't even fill the Census Bureau, or the census for the Bureau of whatever it is. Apologies, but you know, they don't fill out the census because they're scared. I feel like the fear needs to be taken away, and they need to show that their power and the way that the most important thing that they can do for their family and for their children, because that's what matters to these Latino and Latina voters, is what they can do, what they can leave for their children. And the way that they do that is by voting, and that needs to be pushed. But then to get them to vote and how to gain their vote, it's very simple. You have to show them that you care about them. Soccer night. That's great. You know, going out to the mom and pop shops and just, you know, showing your support for the Latin community. It has to be just the first thing, the most pressing matter has to be, we have to show them that voting really, really matters, and it really matters in their beliefs, and that voting is the way that they're going to leave something greater for their children and their grandchildren. And then beyond that, we have to show them we really care about you, and we don't just care about your vote.
And Biden's taking a very approach towards that community. You know, he's talking about how where we need to focus is on poor communities and not high end communities, because they don't need our help as government officials. You know, wealthy people don't need the amount of help that poor people need. And it's important to mention, because with a lot of, you know, partisan based policies of this administration, it's been focused upon getting small businesses back on track, and much less focused upon affordable housing projects. You know, shelters. And one of the biggest issues with the virus, Damien, is the fact that many people don't have housing right now. You know, with the pandemic, a lot of people can't pay for rent. And that's an issue worth mentioning because and in some places, landlords, they give you a pass and they say, with the virus happening, I won't take rent from you. But in a lot of places, landlords are saying, you're out of my place. And we're having people on the streets homeless, almost like the Great Depression, because they can't pay the rent for their facility. So I think that it goes to show that we need more affordable housing projects in case of such a pandemic like this, and also to deal with the amount of homeless people that we have as a result of this pandemic. And we also need stimulus bills are actually a great option for these people, but you know, how long can they survive on stimulus checks? Yeah. And unemployment, you know, we need to have an ending fix to this problem. We've been with the virus for, I don't know how long, months. You know, in the beginning of March, I didn't even know what COVID was. I had barely an idea what the coronavirus was. I thought it'd be gone in a week, 2 weeks. Here we are in literally July, and yeah, we're seeing the virus expand to the proportion it was in March. And it goes to show that, you know, I'm scared because I don't know when I'm gonna go back to school fully, not have to wear a mask. And is my senior year going to be jeopardized? Am I not going to be able to spend time with my friends for 2 or 3 years? I don't know what the future is.
Yeah.
And with my nation's leaders lying to me as a teen about what my future is, I don't know what to believe.
Yeah.
I want to believe them. I mean, I want to believe what Trump is saying. I want to believe the virus is done, is over with. It's going to disappear instantly. But I can't believe that. And I feel like that's why so many Americans don't wear masks. Because they want to believe what Trump is saying, and they convince themselves because they want to have that reality. And that's why with global warming, people didn't believe in global warming because they wanted to not believe in that, because yeah, it's a better future for them. It allowed them to do whatever the hell they wanted. So that's what I feel like the problem is right now. People want to believe in that paradise, and right now it's a paradox, maybe. And once again, we emphasize that point over and over again.
Yeah, no. And I think I have the same approach to COVID as I do to the environment. It's like, why not just take the precautions? It might not be real. You might say that it's not real, but why not just take the precautions either way, just in case? Why not just do something that's better? Why not just do something that's going to create more jobs? Why not just create PPE? It's going to create more jobs. Why not just switch to solar energy? It's going to create more jobs. What negatives are you really facing here? And then on top of that, creating more PPE takes this threat that is the coronavirus, and it really limits it. Creating more solar jobs creates this threat that might or might not be real. Hell, let's say it's not real. But why not take that precaution either way and be like, you know what, this is something that could be catastrophic if it is.
Yeah.
So why not take that precaution either way? And on top of just, you know, if it is, there's also the thing that, hey, you're creating jobs either way. So why not just take that approach? I don't know. It's just an interesting situation that America's in right now. I want to believe everything that's going on too. I want to go back to school. I want to, you know, hang out with people. I want to hang out with my friends. I really want to enjoy these years, you know, with family before I go off to college. But it sucks, and it sucks so much. And we created this podcast for this very reason. But it sucks that they're not listening to us. You know, it sucks that they're saying moms want to send their children back to school. Well, the thing is, we have our own voice too, and me and you have our own voice too. And you have these people, these old people sitting in an office building making decisions about whether or we're not going to wear face masks or whether we are. But they're not asking us. They're not saying, hey, students, what do you guys want to do? Why should we wear face masks? No, you have old, again, not to be – I mean, to be harsh, but not to be harsh, no offense, but a lot of offense. You have old white men sitting, making decisions about me and you, saying, you know, Varun and Damien can sit in a classroom with someone that has COVID-19 and that person doesn't have to wear a mask. Whereas I think that we should, you know, just wear a mask, and we should be able to make that decision for ourselves. If it's going to be case by case relating to my education, let me make the decision for my education and stop making it for me.
Yeah. I wanted to gauge your stance on one thing I saw within our own county specifically, with Dr. Jeff Bearden, our superintendent of Forsyth County Schools, talking about how masks should not be mandatory because people with pre-existing conditions like asthma would not be able to thrive in that environment, and it may make their breathing harder. I have a very strong opinion on this. What is your opinion on specifically what he's saying about asthma patients coming to school and not having to wear masks?
Okay, well, statistics have shown that masks do not, I mean, scientific studies have shown that masks do not limit the amount of oxygen that you get. I have had a strong belief, and this is, I wear a running mask. Okay. I wear a mask to run. Yeah. And the reason that I wear this mask to run is because it actually limits the amount of oxygen that I'm taking in. And by limiting the amount of oxygen that I'm taking in, it causes me to focus because my body redirects that oxygen and uses it more effectively. The human body oftentimes just releases oxygen as a byproduct of whatever it's doing because we don't have a need for the amount of oxygen that we're breathing in. But by restricting the oxygen, which once again, masks don't do, just to mention, let's say that they did though. By restricting the amount of oxygen, let's say it by 10%, our body would then use 90% of oxygen to 100% efficiency as opposed to 100% oxygen at 70% efficiency. So really, even in that scenario, it's good for us. Second of all, what happens when a kid with pre-existing conditions such as asthma gets COVID-19 and dies from it? Right? Why are we only worrying about wearing masks when these kids are the exact same kids that need the masks to be worn? Because of their pre-existing conditions. Yeah. So you're going to say, I think maybe it's a tough position, but I think that it's easier to deal with one student with asthma. If you're going to limit it, you have to make exceptions, not make the requirement. If you get what I'm saying, you have to make the exception. Hey, this kid has asthma. We're going to keep double the eye on him. We're going to make sure we're going to contact trace him all the time. We're going to see where he's been, who he's been with, because he can't wear a mask. But every other student... No. Yeah, has to wear a mask. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, and I agree with everything you're saying. And part of the issue is also that people are not recognizing asthma is not that big of a drawback, and masks especially don't restrict the amount of oxygen that you take in, unless they're like sports running masks that filtrate the oxygen and don't allow as much to come in for training purposes. You know, and part of the issue is that if you have a problem or a health difficulty with wearing a mask, then stay home.
Yeah.
Why are you coming to school? You know, I think that it shouldn't be a choice there. I think that the option should be coming to school and wearing a mask or staying home and not wearing anything. And in that circumstance, it's definitively clear for anybody with asthma what decision they should make. Or if they don't want to wear a mask to school, stay at home. Well, that's fine. It's a way of learning.
I'm going to have to disagree with you, Varun, because I think that if we're going to take that approach, then the exact same counter approach can be said. If we have to wear a mask for you, then why don't you just stay at home? Do you get what I'm saying? If you have a pre-existing condition that's going to require me to wear a mask to suit your needs, why don't you just stay at home? If you're going to die from COVID and it's such a worry for you, why don't you just stay at home? And I don't think that anyone should have to stay at home, whether it's students asthma or students with pre-existing conditions that can die from COVID. I think that there has to be exceptions made.
You're right. But I also think that if you have asthma or any pre-existing condition and you don't want to wear a mask to school, that's the real issue that we have here. You know, it's you not being, you know, okay with wearing a mask to school, even with that big risk that you're facing.
Yeah.
And that's going to make COVID a lot easier to spread, and it's going to cause deaths in schools, which is not going to be, first of all, a good look. Because if a student dies in a public school, that's going to be a terrible look on the entire county. And we're not going to have school for a long, long time.
Yeah.
It's going to be, a lesson that our administrators have to learn. And right now, it's not about, you know, administrators and superintendents worrying about superficial things like educational curriculums, which they worry a lot about. You know, they're worried about what we teach in schools, but more importantly, whether students survive or not with pre-existing conditions. And that's a real moral issue that we have to face as Americans. And I loved how you said earlier in the podcast how they're not listening. And I think that that's what I'm going to title this podcast. Both of us will discuss that later, but I want to title it, "They're Not Listening." And something else after that, because I think that in our nation, the biggest issue is that we are not represented. And that's why I want to start this conversation and encourage voters to come out to the polls this November and to make their voices heard so that we have to have, you know, so that we have politicians that listen to us and that represent our views above the views of partisan and corporate interests. But, you know, it's 8:01 p.m. Eastern time, and it's almost the ending section of our podcast. And I'd like to, you know, end on the point. Go have conversations at home with your peers and encourage these political discussions. And that's the only way we can move this country forward. It's letting our politicians know that there is no way forward unless you listen to the American people. And Damian, you and I called a bunch of senators and U.S. senators and congressmen last week, just asking them to jump on our podcast. And that's, I feel like, the way to move forward. It is contacting these people and making your opinions known. It's being proactive as American citizens. So as always, have conversations, follow our Twitter @PolitiTeenShow or email us at PolitiTeenPodcast@gmail.com.
And as we wrap up another episode of Politatine, I want to thank, as always, Varun for joining me. I want to thank all the listeners that stuck through and made it to the end. Be sure to tune in, you know, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for another episode. And with that being said, we hope that you guys have an amazing ride.
Hello everyone, thank you so much for watching today's episode of the Politatine podcast. As always, we appreciate and thank you for your support over these past couple of weeks as we've grown as a podcast and as a duo between myself and Damien. And please follow us on Twitter at Politatine Show, and always, as always, make sure to follow us on Instagram at Politatine Show, and to connect with us via email at politatinepodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to check out our newly hosted website at politatinepodcast.com. And lastly, please consider becoming a sponsor, a donor for our campaign on Patreon. You can get a link to that through our website at www.politatinepodcast.com. And through becoming a sponsor, you can get some amazing exclusive perks, such as a way to contact us for questions, suggestions, becoming part of an exclusive community where you can kind of talk about your political viewpoints and ask questions of our guests as they come on. You know, live streams of us talking, and even posters, stickers to rep Politatine. So as always, have a great rest of your day, and thank you so much for your support over these past couple of weeks. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much.